and who he could buy. This is a dream, he told himself. This all happened long ago. Mother's been dead for ages and father died years ago. It's all over. He can't humiliate you anymore. But others could. He saw himself at the board meeting of the Astro Corporation, everyone seated at the long table staring at him. Sitting at the head of the table, in the chairman's seat to which she'd just been elected, Pancho Lane was pointing her accusing finger at him. How long are we going to allow the head of our biggest rival to sit on our board of directors? She demanded. How long are we going to let Judas sit among us? All he wants is to take control of Astro Corporation, and he'll keep on screwing us every chance he gets if we don't get rid of him here and now. The vote was close, but not close enough. That's it, then, said Pancho, barely able to conceal the satisfied smirk that played at the corners of her lips. Martin, you've been kicked off this board, and high time, too. He saw how white his face was, how his hands trembled no matter how hard he struggled to control them. The others tried to hide their emotions, but he could see they were secretly laughing at him. All of them, even the ones he had thought were on his side. Feeling cold sweat beating his forehead, his upper lip, he rose shakily to his feet, the blood thundering in his ears, his mind pulsing with ringing, defiant declarations. But all he could manage to choke out was, "You haven't seen the last of me." As he stumbled out of the richly carpeted boardroom, he could hear muffled laughter behind his back. I'll get them, he swore to himself. Each and every one of them. Especially Pancho, that gutter snipe. I'll get her if it takes every penny, every ounce of sweat, every drop of blood that I've got. I'll get her. I'll see her dead. I'll dance on her grave.
Habitat Chrysalis. Big George was at the airlock to greet her when Pancho left her private torch ship, Star Power 3, and stepped aboard the Rock Rat's habitat in orbit about Ceres. "Welcome to our umbelome," George said, with an exaggerated flourish. Pancho grinned at him. "Good to be here, Georgie. Gonna give me the $10 tour?" "Sure will." George led her almost halfway through the rotating complex of connected spacecraft bodies. Pancho enjoyed teasing George about how the habitat looked like a floating junkyard. But once inside the linked vessels, she had to admit that the habitat was clean, comfortable, and even attractive. Each interconnected craft was painted in a distinctive color scheme. Mostly restful pastels, although there were some bolder, brighter hues here and there, and striking designs decorating some of the bulkheads. The place smelled new, fresh, a far cry from the dust-choked caves and tunnels of Ceres. As they stepped through the hatches from one spacecraft to another, George proudly showed Pancho the living quarters, the common rooms, laboratories, workshops, warehouses, and business offices that made up the growing complex. "Got nearly 1,000 people living here now," he declared, "with more coming every week." "I'm impressed," Pancho said. "I really am. You guys have done a terrific job." George smiled boyishly behind his thick red beard. The tour ended at the closed metal door marked Nanotech Lab. Pancho felt a pang of hopeful surprise. "Don't tell me Chris is back." "Nah," George replied, tapping out the combination on the door's security keypad. "Dr. Cardenas is still off on the Saturn expedition." As he pushed the door open, he added, "But she's not the only nanotech genius in the world, you know. We've got a few of our own, right here." The nanotechnology lab was eerily quiet. Pancho saw gleaming cabinets of white and stainless steel lining the walls, and a double row of workbenches that held more metal boxes and instruments. She recognized the gray metal tubing of a scanning field microscope off in one corner, but the rest of the equipment was unfamiliar to her. "Is anybody working here?" she asked. The lab seemed empty of people, except for the two of them. "Should be," George said, frowning slightly. I told him we'd be here. Excuse me, said a soft voice behind them. Pancho turned to see an overweight young man with dark hair tied back in a ponytail, a neatly trimmed beard, and a slightly bemused expression on his roundish face. His thick, dark brows were raised, as if he were puzzled. His lips were curled slightly into a half-smile that seemed apologetic, defensive. He was wearing plain gray coveralls, but had a bright plaid vest over them. No tattoos or jewelry, except for a heavy square gold ring on his right hand. I had to take a break, he said in a gentle, almost feminine voice. I'm sorry I wasn't here when you came in. George clapped him on the shoulder lightly, but it was enough to make the young man totter. That's okay, Lev. When you gotta go, you gotta go. He introduced Pancho to Levi Levinson, then added, Lev here's from MIT, brightest lad we've got, boy genius and all that. Levinson didn't seem at all embarrassed by George's praise. I learned a lot from Dr. Cardenas before she left. Such as? Pancho challenged. Levinson's smile turned slightly superior. I'll show you. I've got a demonstration all set up. He gestured toward the nearer of the two workbenches. George dragged over a couple of high stools and offered one to Pancho as he explained. I was after Chris for years to figure out how we could use nanomachines to separate metals from the ores in the asteroids. Lev here thinks he's solved the problem. Pancho felt impressed. Turning to Levinson, she asked, Have you? He looked quietly confident, almost smug. All he said was, Watch. Pancho watched. Levinson took a dark, lumpy, potato-sized chunk of a metallic asteroid and deposited it into one of the big metal cubicles on the workbench. Half a dozen transparent plastic tubes led from the container to smaller bins farther down the bench. Pancho saw that a digital timer started counting seconds when Levinson clicked the lid closed. It's not much of a trick to program nanomachines to separate a specific element from a gross sample, he said. Nanos are quite capable of taking specific atoms from a sample of material. It's just a matter of programming them properly.
Uh-huh, said Pancho.
The problem's always been to separate all the different elements in a void simultaneously, without the nanos interfering with one another.
And in a high UV environment, George added.
Levinson shrugged his rounded shoulders. That part was easy. Just harden the nanos so UV won't dissociate them. Pointing to the sealed container, Pancho asked,
You mean these nanomachines won't be knocked out by ultraviolet light?
That's why I keep them sealed inside the container, Levinson answered. If they got loose, they'd start taking the habitat apart, atom by atom.
Jeeps, Pancho muttered.
It's perfectly safe, Levinson calmly assured her. The container is lined with diamond surfaces, and none of the nanos are programmed to separate carbon.
So they can't attack people, George said.
Levinson nodded, but Pancho thought that people also contained iron, phosphorus, and a lot of other elements that those nanomachines were programmed to separate. Maybe that's why Chris dragged her feet on this project, she thought. A bell pinged. An electric motor whirred. Pancho saw little trickles of what looked like dirt or dust sliding down the six transparent tubes toward the bins on the workbench. As she looked closer, though, several of the growing piles seemed to glitter in the light from the overhead lamps. The transport tubes are also pure diamond, Levinson said. Just a precaution, in case a few of the nanomachines are still present in the differentiated samples. Pancho nodded wordlessly. Levinson applied a handheld mass spectrometer to each of the piles of dirt in turn. Pure iron, pure nickel, gold, silver, platinum, and lead. With a wave of one hand, he said, Voila! George clapped his beefy hands together. You see, Pancho? With nanomachines, we can mine the metals out of the roids easy as pie.
All the slug work gets done by the nanos. All the miners have to do is sit back and let the little bugs